It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. That is pianist Jorge Federico Osorio playing from Manuel Ponce's Piano Concerto No. 1, Romántico. Osorio will play the concerto with the Madison Symphony Orchestra and Chorus in their season finale, which is a Cinco de Mayo celebration of Mexican composers and musicians. As we explore classical music concerts, call in with a question. You can share comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lori Skelton is here, Wisconsin Public Radio's host for the weekday program Afternoon Classics. Lori also hosts and produces WPR's weekly broadcast of Wisconsin Classical. Lori, welcome back.
It is so good to be here. We've got great things to talk about.
We have got some you've just put together such a fantastic amount.
I didn't put it together. Trust me, the state put this together.
Okay. So here we are. April through May is when orchestras put on these season finales. What do you look for in a season finale performance?
It should be a celebration. Mm. Now, for some, that means the big, rare works that don't get performed often. You've had an entire season to work on it, to practice, to get it ready. For some, that means all the favorites. Let's get everybody out and enjoy all the things we know we love. Ultimately, for me, for any ensemble, you've been working together now, say, 8-9 months. I think a season finale should be about showing off, showing what you've accomplished in this last year of artistic growth, of working better together with your colleagues. This should show you at your best, whatever you do.
Oh, that's really interesting. Also, some symphonies have been putting, like, masterworks in their title for their season. You know, what types of certain qualities or characteristics that you would expect from masterworks?
That's a really good question, because I think everyone will answer it a little bit differently.
Okay. Yeah.
I will say this. For a lot of people, a masterwork is something that has stood the test of time. Mm. For many people, that means a composer like Beethoven. And Beethoven is showing up an awful lot in the next couple of months.
Mahler is trending.
In part because of the film Maestro.
Ah, okay.
And that incredible performance of the Mahler second that was included in the film. So Mahler is somebody we look to, especially because Leonard Bernstein kind of brought Mahler out of obscurity in the middle of the 20th century. Mahler's works are big. Often involving a chorus or a vocalist. So again, you're bringing all your forces together for a concert like that.
Let's zoom in here on the calendar and listen to some music. The Madison Symphony Orchestra features this Cinco de Mayo celebration, three concerts, the 3rd through the 5th. It's a Grammy-winning group, Mariachi Los Compreros, playing their rendition of Cuando Yo Quiera Has de Volver. Let's listen.
Cuando yo quieras devolver, no serás tú quien lo decida. Cuando la gana a mí me dé, tú volverás cuando yo diga. Porque aunque trates de olvidar, nunca
lo What are you looking for out of this concert series and this tribute?
A great deal of emotion and a great deal of virtuosity. For anyone who thinks classical music is only European composers, well, yes, Europeans came to Latin America in the 1600s, and classical music took hold, but the best classical music out of Latin America takes into account indigenous dances and songs and ceremonial music. And what we're going to see for that concert, again, world-class pianist performing a work from a Mexican composer from 1912, just before he started using more indigenous material. So here was a composer, Manuel Ponce, had just come back from studying in Europe, brought to Mexico. Okay, this is what I've learned. And in the subsequent decades, he went further and further. So we have one aspect of Mexican classical in that piano concerto, and we have another in, mariachi bands have incredibly virtuosic guitars. Mm. Those trumpet lines are not easy, and there will be violins as well. So the combination gives you this incredible span of what Mexican classical music is. It's incredibly exciting.
We are talking about all the excitement and the synergy, the energy of the spring music concert season with Lori Skelton, host of WPR's Afternoon Classics. You can join in along the way. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Moving now to the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra, playing both Vivaldi's The Four Seasons and Astor Piazzolla's The Four Seasons of Buenos Aires. Let's hear La Serenissima, playing part of The Four Seasons by Vivaldi. So the concert is titled Tango Meets Vivaldi. What can we expect there on this collision course?
Believe it or not, it's not such a collision. Vivaldi wrote The Four Seasons. It was one of the very first pieces of instrumental music to have extra musical connotations. He actually wrote sonnets to say, this is what my music is about. And you hear, as you just heard, the birds, the insects getting very agitated before a storm in the summer. Now, in the 1960s, Astor Piazzolla was developing what we now call Nuevo Tango. You can't necessarily dance to it, just like you can't really dance to a Strauss waltz. they're concert dances, but he wrote these four separate pieces that he would occasionally play together. In the 1990s, a Russian composer rearranged the Piazzolla pieces for violin and string orchestra, and he actually inserted quotes from the Vivaldi pieces into them. But he took into account Vivaldi was writing in Italy, Piazzolla, Buenos Aires, we've got a hemisphere difference. So what he did was he'd sneak, say, a quote from Vivaldi's Winter into the Astor Piazzolla summer season in Buenos Aires.
I'm mixing it up a bit.
And now I've attended concerts where the ensemble has played both of them. They'll usually alternate, one Vivaldi, one Piazzolla. It's amazing. Aww. You'd think, how can these two pieces possibly work? They're both high energy. They both really demand a lot from your string players. Again, highly virtuosic works. It's a great night at a concert.
And the La Crosse Symphony is celebrating its 125th anniversary and has a world premiere of Madrigal Divine, composer Nathaniel Dett. And so what do you make of an orchestra then with performing this work?
Our Nathaniel Dett is an African-American composer who is getting more and more attention. But unfortunately, not everything he wrote is for a big ensemble. What La Crosse is doing is they're taking one of his piano miniatures and orchestrating it, giving the orchestra a chance to show you what this composer is about.
Wow.
So this is exactly what an orchestra at 125 years should be doing. You talk about masterworks, and yes, that's a bedrock for so many for classical music. But classical music has been around for centuries because it is an evolving form. And for an orchestra to say, all right, we need a new voice, we need to give this voice a new setting, and we will carry that forward. It's a wonderful thing to do.
And I want to give a shout out to the Dean of Northwestern's Music School, Jonathan Bailey Holland, who is taking that work, taking that work forward. Is that it?
I believe so. It would be lovely to see other miniatures from our Nathaniel Dett orchestrated in the same way. So maybe some other orchestras around the state can pick that up.
Lori Skelton is host of WPR's weekday classical music program, Afternoon Classics. This is Astor Piazzolla's Primavera Porteña from the Four Seasons of Buenos Aires. The La Crosse Symphony will be playing this Piazzolla's and Vivaldi's versions of the Four Seasons on June 1st. Call in, share your insights on classical, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. That is jazz pianist and composer James P. Johnson, the pioneer of Harlem Stride Piano, and here performing Fats Waller's Honeysuckle Rose. Laurie Skelton, our guide to the spring classical music lineup with concerts slated for all corners of Wisconsin. We're getting a taste of them. Laurie is host of Afternoon Classics on WPR. Call in with a question. You can be part of the conversation at 800-642-1234. Okay, so we're headed to Brookfield now, where Aaron Deal is performing his Stride and Ragtime program honoring pioneers of early African-American jazz. What is slated here?
Aaron Deal has been the artistic partner for the Milwaukee Symphony for three seasons now. This Stride and Ragtime program is just him at the piano. He's been performing this around the country, I think around the world even, for over 4 years now. He was doing it a lot on stream, even during the pandemic. What you have is a program that starts off with the early pioneers, and Aaron Deal is also a composer, so he brings us forward through the 20th century, showing how these are the roots of what is being developed now. And you may think you know from stride piano, you may think you know from ragtime. We've all got our favorites in that genre. He's going to take it even further. He's really going to give you a great grounding, and that means an appreciation for what you will hear in the future.
Well, let's hear Aaron Deal playing Prologue from his 2013 album, Bespoke Man's Narrative. So, Laurie, what can you tell us about stride in this East Coast style of piano playing?
In its basic form, stride piano is where your right hand is playing the melody, and the left hand is playing one low note and then a chord over an octave higher. Your hand is striding or leaping on the keyboard. It's very effective if you don't have a rhythm section, because your left hand basically becomes the bass and the drums. And it's the basis for a lot of incredible music. Again, the idea that this is another form that evolves. Jazz is not static, and here we are going to get the basics and move it forward. We've got 88 keys on a piano, and you sometimes speak in a metaphorical sense of the piano can be an orchestra. I think what you're going to come away with from this concert is, yes, the piano can be an orchestra for jazz as well.
And it's interesting, too, because Aaron Deal kind of melds, he crosses jazz and classical influences. So what he might do to James P. Johnson's works could be pretty interesting.
And it's what he's going to do to your ears that is, I think, the most interesting. Even if you think you know what jazz is, I think you're going to be surprised. And if you don't know what jazz is, this is going to be a great way to find out.
Oh, so now we are traveling to April 13th, which is Saturday. Clara Schumann's A Minor Concerto, performed by a Ukrainian-American pianist in Anna Shelest?
I believe Shelest.
Anna Shelest. Performing with the Duluth Superior Symphony. And so can you talk a little bit about what she is bringing to this performance?
Clara Schumann is someone who has been getting a great deal more attention since the 1970s, but we're still catching up on a lot of what she did, in part because she was kind of written off as, oh, she's just a piano prodigy. Yeah, she was only having concert tours around Europe when she was a teenager. Well, she was having concert tours around Europe throughout her life. She was an incredible teacher. She changed the way we listened to piano recitals. She said, let's get away from some of the virtuosic stuff and start playing smaller, more subtler pieces that really show off the musicality rather than the theatrical, the fireworks in a pianist. All this while she was married, to a composer, somewhat volatile composer, while she was writing her own music and having 8 kids. This was an incredibly talented woman who needs more attention. Clara Schumann's piano concerto is being played more and more often. Her piano sonata, which she wrote when she was 22, was not performed during her lifetime. It wasn't published until the 1990s. So wow. We've got some catching up to do.
A lot of catching up. And I was kind of scrolling through Anna Schella's performances. She seems to gravitate to Schumann and has been doing a number of performances leading up to this moment.
And so why not have this person come and show what this concerto really can do? Again, this was one of those things that Clara wrote when she was a teenager, hoping to have an opportunity to keep performing it herself. Now we've got new generations of women taking it on.
I love to hear that. Spring Music Concerts here with Laurie Skelton, our guide, host of WPR's Afternoon Classics. You can join in on this journey. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts on classical concerts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So tomorrow night, Milwaukee's Present Music will feature the Blue Hour in full with one of the composers, Shara Nova, singing with a small string orchestra. So let's hear Nova singing My Dear from the Blue Hour song cycle in the section written by Sarah Kirkland Snyder.
My dear, I think yes. My father crossed the field and stood. My hair a cold flag of rain, my hands coated with tomb dust, my mother's hand broken by a fierce wind.
I could just go on listening. So this is The Blue Hour, written by 5 women composers and sung here by one of the composers. What are you expecting?
Remember when I said a season finale should be a big celebration? Well, first of all, this is not the season finale for Present Music. They've got another concert coming up this season. This is the flip side of intense emotional experience when it's very, very internal. This is a 75-minute song cycle. 5 women composers working with one expansive poem, Carolyn Forché's On Earth. This is a path of a woman's life journey. It's in English, so anyone who says, oh, I'm uncomfortable listening to songs where I don't understand the language, you can definitely understand what you're hearing. Shara Nova is not someone I knew before I heard what Present Music was doing. And as you can tell, this is a voice that defies description. This is a voice that gets in your soul quickly and stays there. What am I expecting? I won't be able to attend the concert in person, but Present Music is hanging on to the option of a streaming concert online. I will be sitting with my headphones on, and I don't think you're going to be able to talk to me for probably an hour after the concert ends. It's going to be that intense. It's going to be amazing.
And I appreciate that this is a collaborative effort, a unified work.
Right.
That to me is really notable here.
And it's genre bending. It was on the top of NPR's top 10 lists across genres all last year. And it's only being performed twice in the world this year, once in Milwaukee and once in Paris. So this is something you do not want to miss.
Laurie Skelton, host of WPR's Afternoon Classics, our guide to classical concerts around our state. Call in questions, share your perspectives, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thank you. Needs no introduction. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. That is the London Symphony Orchestra performing The Imperial March by John Williams from Star Wars. It's a hint of what's to come for several symphony lineups, and you can be part of this conversation about spring classical performances. Give a shout out to your local symphony. The number to call in with a question, share thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Laurie Skelton is here, host of Afternoon Classics, the weekday classical music program on WPR. So, Laurie, by the numbers, this spring, movie soundtrack music by John Williams will be performed by four symphony orchestra, and then there are high schools, two concerts from high schools. There's Kenosha's Reuther Central there on May 4th, Bigfoot High School, Walworth, May 18th. So what are in some of these lineups?
Obviously, Star Wars. Yeah. All the big, exciting Raiders of the Lost Ark and Jurassic Park and
Jurassic
Harry Potter.
Park.
And
okay.
It's... With John Williams' 90th birthday fairly recently, obviously we wanted to celebrate him. I think it's a good reminder, though, movie soundtracks are meant to be emotional. Obviously the big themes that stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about underscoring in a film, this is powerful music that you may not be aware always you're listening to. You may not be aware that it is influencing what you're seeing. It can mm-hmm. often give you the inner life of a character when nothing is being verbalized.
Mm.
So if you're thinking, oh, come on, John Williams, isn't that just a little too easy, a little too obvious? Don't sell movie music short. When you have a chance to really focus on what's going on under the pictures on screen, I think you're going to be surprised at how good it can be.
Well, music having a language to itself as well and really carrying that plot forward. It makes me wonder, though, like, how do the musicians feel about playing, like, E.T. and Jurassic Park and Star Wars? I sometimes wonder what they're thinking about John Williams and those compositions.
I will be honest. I've lost count of the number of musicians who have told me, kids are running up to me after a concert, sometimes days after a concert, if they see me with my instrument case and they suddenly connect, oh, you played the big music on the stage with the film. The response from younger people making that connection between the acoustic instrument and the big cinematic experience, it's powerful. And I say that as someone who heard her first Wagner arias when Bugs Bunny was singing them. So we make jokes, yes. Don't sell it short. There is a reason it works.
Yeah, there's a gateway here to introduce young people to the music.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra in late June, they're going to be doing another live film score, and it's going to be Toy Story. I mean, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in your symphony orchestra. Give them some love.
You got to save that line. You got to use that line. I mean, that's genius. Okay, so we're going to move on here to Requiem.
From the sublime to the scary.
Okay, right. I didn't say that we'd have segues here. So, Verdi's Requiem. This is the Chicago Symphony Orchestra playing Dies Irae from Requiem. Okay, and so Maestro John Demain conducting this piece with the Madison Symphony Orchestra April 12th to the 14th. That's very soon, by the way. What can you tell us here?
This is a Requiem Mass. Verdi was moved to write it in 1874 because someone he admired, a philosopher, a writer, Alessandro Manzoni, had died. He wanted to write something in tribute. But this is Verdi. The grandest of grand operas. As you heard, This is not something that can be performed in a church. This is not something that's going to have a liturgical setting. This is a 90-minute opera. You have a very demanding set of pieces for the chorus to sing. As you just heard, you're going to destroy your percussion section before the performance is out. You have four operatic soloists who are asked to sing so many different kinds of solos. You get the full range of character that you expect from certain operatic voices. I saw a Facebook post from one of the recording engineers who's working at Overture and mentioning the Dies Irae, he said, that's kind of metal, isn't it, 150 years ago. It is scary, especially when you get to the end, the Libera me, deliver me, Lord, from hellfire. And it's done as a means of getting the chorus to sing in fugues, so you've got the chorus over and over, like all the voices in the world, deliver me, deliver me, deliver me. At times, the soprano is shouting, demanding salvation, but it ends very, very quietly. Suddenly, you realize just how human and how tiny you are. Liberame, liberame. It is a 90-minute opera on the subject of your own mortality. It's an amazing thing to sing. It's an amazing thing to witness. I'm not going to make any comments about it's just a few days after the eclipse. I'll leave you to put that together. But it's always, this is a masterwork. And because it requires so much of an orchestra in its chorus, it's not done that often.
How does an orchestra prepare for it, rehearse it, put all of these moving parts together?
Orchestras, in general, even if it's not the concert this coming weekend, they will usually have the music beforehand. And I hear this from so many people. You never show up to rehearsal to learn your part. You show up to rehearsal to learn what your part does with everything else together. So if you're a smart musician, you get the music ahead of time, you learn your part, and then you show up. And again, you've been working with your colleagues now all season. You know how to work together. You know how to help one another. That's what the final week of rehearsals does. How does a chorus prepare for this? Chorus has been working on this in some form all season. I can guarantee you that. Because this is a marathon. You do not just show up and try to run it. You train for this.
Lori Skelton, host of WPR's Afternoon Classics, taking us on a tour of spring classical music concerts. And you can join in, be part of the conversation, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Lori, let's shine a light on John Demain in September, announcing he'll step down as music director of the Madison Symphony at the end of the 2025-2026 season. And I understand that also is a huge anniversary for the symphony, 100 years.
Yes. John Demain celebrating his 30th anniversary this year, symphony coming up to 100 years. Goodbyes are never easy. And I imagine everyone is approaching these milestones with a great deal of emotion, incredible pride in what has been accomplished, incredible trepidation, thinking, oh no, we're going to have to start over again with somebody else. I know everybody is, let's just say everybody is taking care of one another. It will be very difficult for a lot of people to say goodbye. I think the idea, though, that John Demain is giving us, shall we say, advance notice, there will be guest conductors coming in. It's crazy not to think they might be thinking maybe they might be the next music director. So this gives an orchestra a chance to work with different conductors. It gives different conductors a chance to get to know the orchestra, get to know Overture Hall, get to learn how their conducting style works in that space. It's a very odd job interview.
Relationship building here.
Yes. before you've even got the job, you sort of have to get the job. So it's going to be a little nervous and scary, but it's also going to be a very exciting couple of years as the symphony starts thinking about where can we go next.
Mm.
Well, we'll be watching and listening. The Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra and the Chippewa Valley Festival Choir will perform Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Ode to Joy, May 11th, Pablo Center in Eau Claire. And let's hear Ode to Joy performed by the Berlin Philharmonic.
Freude, Freude.
So, Lori, what comes up for you?
Aside from all the times I've sung this...
all the flashbacks.
What comes up for me is what can grow out of something relatively simple. That tune, the Ode to Joy tune, isn't complex at all. Leonard Bernstein once called it beer hall music. I mean, it's a tune that anybody can sing. Even after you've downed a few, you still know where you are with that melody. But what grows out of it, of course, the intense energy of the singers behind those beautiful words by Schiller, the idea that we are meant to care for one another and we are meant to be joyful together, that mankind is a brotherhood, sisterhood, if you will, and that there is a great deal of wonderful that can be built out of something relatively simple.
Mm, and I think the audience probably is also very much a part of that as well.
Absolutely. This is something you show up knowing you're going to be refreshed emotionally, spiritually, if you will. There's a reason that Joyful shows up in Sister Act 2. It's the same tune. Somebody gave it new words in 1907, and they gave it a modern twist for that movie. That tune carries. It carries us all to a better place.
WPR classical music host Lori Skelton touring us to amazing places around the spring concert season in Wisconsin. This is virtuoso violinist Gilles Appop playing part of the first movement in Beethoven's D major violin concerto. Appop, a guest soloist with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra this month. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the New York Philharmonic playing Movement 4 in Gustav Mahler's Titan. Lori Skelton, host of WPR's weekday classical music program, Afternoon Classics, highlighting spring classical performances around the state. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lori, you gave us a taste earlier of Gustav Mahler's popularity popping up here in Symphony No. 1 in D major. Titan will be played by Fox Valley Symphony on the 27th of this month and Sheboygan Symphony on May 18th. So what is making Titan a popular choice?
Mahler is a wonderful thing to end a season with. It's big, it's bold, it asks everything and more from your orchestra. Mm. However, a lot of Mahler's symphonies are over an hour in length. And as I say, a lot of them need your chorus, you need vocalists. Not everybody wants to devote that much time to one composer for their season finale. The first symphony, which Mahler kind of put together from a bunch of earlier works, comes in about an hour. So you've got time to play other pieces, but still give you that grand symphonic experience to close your season. What is fun for audiences is that there's a tune we recognize as Frère Jacques, Are You Sleeping? Are You Sleeping? Now, it was also sung in Mahler's Boyhood, but it's sung in a minor key in Austria. And he uses that tune in the minor key in one of the movements. So it's always a tease for the audience thinking, oh, I know this. Oh, wait a minute. I don't know this. So there's a follow-up for a composer named Evan Williams. He used to work at Lawrence University. He's written a short piece called Titan that uses some of those themes from the Mahler Symphony as a way to say, okay, audiences, you think you got fooled by the Mahler. Let me show you what happens when we take those tunes and we put them into the 21st century.
So some playful elements there.
I believe one of the words he uses to describe it is groove.
Okay.
So it's taking, again, the idea that you've got a familiar tune, a folk tune, a fairy tale tune, and it goes how many different places when you give it to a symphony orchestra? It's an amazing way to find out.
Now do this. Now do that.
Yes.
Now try this. How about here? And we just keep following around as the audience, just going from one place to the next, and who knows where it takes us.
As the orchestra tosses the tune back and forth, that's part of the fun of an orchestra. That's why you have different instruments and different combinations. They do so many different things.
Well, you are taking us now to the Duluth Superior Symphony. Opens its May 4th season finale concert with a fanfare for the Uncommon Woman, and closes with Karl Orff's Carmina Burana in the house. And so that is going to be awesome. But let's listen to London Symphony Orchestra playing In Taberna Quando Sumos from Carmina Burana. I'm ping-ponging there and also thinking of a figure skater, and doing a spin very fast.
Classical music can offer us some of the peak experiences of being human. Classical music can also take us to a tavern and say, everybody drink up, which is exactly beebeat. You hear the number of beebeats, that's just Latin for drink. Everybody drinks. We go from Leonard Bernstein calling Beethoven beer hall music to Carmina Burana has a scene in the tavern.
Oh, I love that. Well, take us to Concerts on the Square. And this is so beloved in Madison, and starting June 26th. And there's going to be a Grammy-nominated Latin band, Tiempo Libre.
They've been here before.
Been here before.
Audience favorites.
Yeah. So what to expect from the season?
Six concerts outdoors, and there's an opportunity to hear a variety, again, bringing different things to a classical chamber orchestra. One concert I'm really looking forward to is the July 10th concert, when one of the final forte performers is going to be doing the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto. Jane Story will be performing with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. They're ending the season on July 31st. Talk about a crowd pleaser. John Novacek is going to be the soloist for the Rhapsody in Blue.
Oh, wow. And all outdoors, a beautiful scene mm-hmm. around the Capitol. So,
yes. Yeah. Just make certain that you bring a low chair when you set down your picnic blanket. You do not want to be blocking anyone's view. Concerts on the Square is... I mean, it's been 40 years for Concerts on the Square. It's also the 25th anniversary season for Maestro Andrew Sewell. So again, lots to celebrate. Mm. And a great place to bring your kids if they've never heard classical music before. Let them run around on the grass while they're listening to the string section.
Oh, I love it. Well, let's land here on news from WPR later in May, expanding locally hosted classical music 7 days a week. There's also jazz, world, folk music on each weekend. What are the possibilities here? Because Wisconsin Classical on Sundays is also expanding to a two-hour program.
We're going to go from noon until 2. And as you just heard, some weeks we've got so many concerts to talk about. Yeah. I don't have enough time in an hour to actually highlight more of the music. It will be wonderful to have more Wisconsin performances on the weekend. I'm hoping that we have more time to spend with the entire state, getting more concerts recorded, getting more artists interviewed, having a chance for Wisconsin to hear Wisconsin is what I'm really hoping for our Sunday afternoons.
Aww.
We've had a great start with the recordings we do have. I just want to make it bigger.
I love it. Lori, thank you for stopping by. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Lori Skelton, WPR's host of Afternoon Classics and also hosts Wisconsin Classical. This is London Symphony Orchestra performing O Fortuna from Carmina Burana. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.